Hello, Terry Wallace.
Well, I know what we should be talking about. I know what the big story is.
Go on. You
being a disgrace to your Carlton brethren.
Oh, you were listening to this yesterday, weren't you?
Yes, because I
didn't stand here and demand that Shane Mumford go straight to the tribunal and cop 6 weeks. I'm a traitor to my colours.
That was fierce.
I mean, I do a Carlton podcast on a Monday night with two of my oldest and dearest. We had a massive blow on that again last night. Massive blue. I didn't even want to talk about it. We ended up having a blue on the podcast.
I know the Murphy family reasonably well, and obviously so I'm in that corner.
Yep.
But I didn't think it was a report.
Why not?
Why not? Because what was he going to get reported for?
Well, that's what I wanted, someone who wants him to get rubbed out. Unduly rough play is the one they're all settling on.
For people who sort of said it was off the play, and it wasn't off the play. It was in the course of the action, and what did he hit him with?
Well, it was his upper thigh.
Well, yeah, upper thigh, even if it was knee, it wasn't in a kneeing action.
Yeah.
It was just a collision.
Yeah, yeah. He knows.
You're allowed to collide into people.
This is one, and yes, you are. No question about it. The other thing that...
He meant to hurt him.
I've got
no issue with the fact that he meant to hurt. But if you do that within a legal sense, and it's not the same as the head, because we've got a different rule for the head because of concussions, but there's been a lot of blokes that have had, you know, broken sternums and broken ribs, you know, from bone crunching action. And most people, not all, but most people want to go through the turnstiles and see a bit of that.
Well,
they love the physicality of our game.
And a lot of it's been taken out of the game. We understand that for the right reason. A lot of the off-the-ball stuff behind the play. For all of the right reasons, the violence is gone.
Absolutely,
Terry. But the minute we take that part, the collision aspect of it, out of the game, the minute you try and legislate against accidents happening in footy, and I reckon Shane Mumford, he's one of those... He's almost a dinosaur because he does play with intent.
Oh, no doubt. He said it.
And I would think that if you were on the match review panel, or if you were the match review officer, Shane Mumford would bob up in your two look-ats probably more than any other player in the competition.
I would agree with that.
You'd be, oh, geez, he's
right
on the edge again. Yeah. You know, but you've got to have a reason to report the bloke.
The flip side of that is, don't you love players who play right on the edge?
Well, Terry, wouldn't Carlton love to have had a Shane Mumford in their 22 against the Giants on Sunday?
Well, last week when I was doing the match committee show, I called GWS without him Mummy's Boys.
Right, well,
obviously the play on words, but I mean, the difference between that side standing tall when he's in and when he's out is enormous.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone would love that. I mean, look, do I like to see Mark Murphy hurt like
that?
No,
of course not.
Of course not. But, I mean, that's why you get paid the big bucks, because it's a dangerous game out there.
Yep, and the chance of getting injured is ever present.
Correct.
It's ever present in football.
And you don't know when it's your turn. You drive to the game. That's one of the tough things about our game.
Yep.
You drive to the game hoping that you're not going to be Jaron Geary.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly. Hey, we saw a collision in the Brisbane Adelaide game between Keith
massive.
And Hardigan. Now,
absolutely.
Both of those boys could have been absolutely poleaxed. They could have been in real trouble, both of those players.
Yeah.
And that's an absolute football accident.
I mean,
we're burying the – we got Plough Low and Footy Golf later. We're burying the lead.
What's the lead?
That was the lead yesterday. The lead is what happened yesterday morning our time, but probably when you got to see it, it would have been last night, or maybe you got to see it live.
Oh, yes, we...
The conclusion, the farewell to our good dear friends, Terry. So let's give nothing away.
So where is West of...
West Ross. I love the fact that she's doing that. 10 out of 10 for as a conclusion to the whole thing.
Well, one of my family members had given about a 4.
No, not happy, right?
But I'm very comfortable.
I was an 8 out of 10 as well.
Yeah.
There's a heap of stuff you want to talk about. So Mumford, tick, we've already done that. Before we get to a couple of calls, can I ask you, the straight to tribunal of Dale Thomas
suggests to me that it's going to be more than a fine.
I'm trying to work this out. No one's been rubbed out for verbal abuse ever, have they, in the history of the game? Can you remember anyone? If anyone can, 0433981116.
But is it verbal abuse, or is it more than verbal abuse?
Well, if it's...
when you're calling someone a cheat, you're going to the integrity of the game.
Yeah, you are.
So that's, to me, that's different than verbal abuse. I will give you another one. If Rampy gets a week, 1 week, just 1 week, for stupidity last week, and I'm not talking about climbing up the post, so I'm talking about having a crack at the umpire. If he gets a week, do you think Dale Thomas says what he says this week?
Well, you'd hope not.
I would think absolutely.
Okay, so is Dale Thomas going to the tribunal because of Dane Rampy last week?
Well, because all of a sudden now it's becoming...
It's on the agenda.
And it's becoming ongoing. Yeah, we've had two in 2 weeks.
You wonder how many times prior to Dane Rampy abusing an umpire and being captured on the microphones, you wonder how many times this year an umpire has been abused by a player in similar nature, but it hasn't been captured.
Yep.
I wonder whether it's been captured. We've got to do something about it. The umpires clearly feel like they're not getting the support from head office over the recent journey that they should have been getting.
Yep.
And this is part of head office saying, right, we're going to fly the flag for you.
Yeah, it's really interesting. But the integrity part of it, separate it from, and I've sort of seen on social media a bit, abusing, you can smash somebody's ribs in, but abusing an umpire and you go straight to the tribunal. It's not abusing an umpire.
Mm. No, that's
I think
different.
There should be a no tolerance anyway.
Yep.
Just 1 week for stupidity.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got no issue as jumper punching and all that.
Yep.
If you want to be a goose, you miss a week.
Oh, I'm all for it. The imbecile rule or the idiot rule or whatever you want to call it. I agree.
So, I spoke to, just the no tolerance issue around the umpires. I spoke to KB last night. I do a show from 10:30 to midnight on a Saturday night.
Mm.
And the Essendon supporters, I don't think you're actually doing yourselves a favour, to be honest. I don't think you're doing your team a favour by being as vitriolic as what they are at the moment. I did the Hobart game, so was all across that game. Clearly, at the same time, you can't be watching the other game. You're calling a game live. So from 10:30 to 12, we just had Essendon support after Essendon supporter after Essendon supporter ringing in sort of saying, just we're over it. This is the greatest disgrace of all time. We had this game won. You watch the three worst decisions you're ever going to see in your lifetime. And I sort of sat there sort of saying, I can't wait to get home to actually have a look at the three. Now, one of them, I'll grant Essendon supporters, one of them I thought was probably the wrong call. There was some touch of the shoulder and neck by Redmond, but I think it was a wrong call personally.
Just
in the spirit of the game, I thought it was a wrong call. One of them was 100%, not per inch, 100% right. That was the Langford holding the ball. He had prior opportunity, tried to take the guy on, got tackled to ground, ball, goal, kicked.
Yep.
100% right. And the other one was one of those 50-50 calls. If they called it, if they hadn't called it, you wouldn't have blew either way. But it was there.
Yeah.
It was there. It was Hurley and blocking of Hogan. He took his eyes off the ball, had a look to see who was around and what to do, and then took Hogan under the ball.
Yeah.
So I'll give you three. No chance of three. I'll argue the point that two were right and one was wrong, but it certainly was no more than
that. The one thing you'll never, ever lose a dollar supporting the concept of is that supporters, by and large, in fact, in vast majorities, will see things through
their own eyes. That's
just the reality of footy. Yeah. And you'll never change that, and that's just the way it is.
And particularly when it's a supporter base where there's only really one team at the at the stadium, which was on the weekend. I mean, there's very, very few Fremantle people there. So the fervour.
Of course.
Yeah, just grows and grows. I mean, it's almost like tsunami. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger where, they're cheating. They're against us.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the case.
We all know, off the text message, we all know the media's been told to go easy on umpires, so move on, please. Have you been told, hand on heart, have you been told to go easy on umpires?
No.
To that text, Craig is the...
Well, I wouldn't be speaking about it except my show for an hour and a half.
People think.
My show for an hour and a half on Saturday night was just taken over by vitriol, which wasn't correct. I'm fine If you want to come
Terry,
on.
The, you're on the take, mate. You're on the take. The AFL's giving you a snip to stick up for the umpires, mate. We all know that.
I'm fine if it's actually right. But when we spent an hour and a half absolutely ripping the shreds out of something that's not correct.
It's the Subway lunch hour. It is. Middle of the year, you know, we're all getting a bit hot under the collar. It's good. Footy evokes this sort of passion. It's the Subway lunch hour. Head to Subway, try the new hot grilled paninis. Before I get to other bits and pieces with you and other calls, Bobcats in Woodend, and there's another element of the tribunal that, the match review that I do want to talk to you about, Terry, but yep. Bobcat wants to have a quick chat about the Mumford incident, so fire away, mate.
G'day, boys. How are you going?
Good, thank you.
Hey, Murray, I'm on your side with that Mumford incident. Unfortunate as it was, it is what it is. So I'm sticking up for you, Cobber.
Thanks, Bobcat.
Well, there's one.
Yeah. You've got to have a clear-cut route. Look, no, we've done enough. Well, let's not talk about that again. There's been this ongoing or developing conversation about the best get treated a certain way.
Yep.
And the lesser names get treated another.
Which I even going back 40 years to my time, I believe that was always the case.
So I know that there's a reasonably clear-cut difference between Ablett Fife and Soldo Matheson. I understand three were deemed to be in the play.
Correct.
And two were not.
Yeah.
But Soldo and Matheson, Terry, was the contact sufficient enough to be deemed a reportable offence, which is what Chris Scott argued about Gary Ablett. Was the contact and Matheson's stupid thing to do, Soldo, keep your forearms down, but was there sufficient enough contact in those incidents for those two to be reported?
It's arguable, but where one, in my opinion, is, well, one's an intentional act. One's an intentional act. One's a consequence of playing the game.
Yep.
You handled that situation wrong, but it's part of the game.
Yep.
The other never needed to happen. And if you want to put the hat on of the best players in the game, Dustin Martin went out.
He did.
For that. So it doesn't necessarily always stack up, but it's looking after the best.
Yep. So the reason I ask you that is I think it's worth getting the thought of somebody like you on it, and there's been a lot of people wanting to know about to get your comment on Soldo. So,
I think Soldo should have gone out because I thought it was stupid.
It was stupid.
One week for stupidity again. I mean, there's another one. So
stupid.
And disappointing because he was damn good. I thought he did a really good job. I know McAvoy went down and that sort of made the job easier, but I thought he was pretty good.
As are they.
Yeah,
as are they.
They're
pretty good.
They're one of the four that can win it.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, is it surprising you that they're doing it with the key injuries that they've got?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought there'd be a tipping point at some stage, and they've been able to manage.
They've got through it, haven't they? Rick's on the road. Good afternoon, mate.
G'day, guys.
Hi, Rick.
Fire away.
I just want to know, is there a certain expectation from, you guys, being that you're, pretty highly and heavily into the industry? Is there a certain expectation of where Carlton should be right now? Because, let's be honest, I mean, the list that Bolton took over from Malthouse was always going to be 5-6 years anyway before you're going to get something out of him. And he might talk about effort, and that's probably what we want. But if you're talking about wins on the board, I think we're just jumping a little bit too far. I mean, Bolton's only really been in charge for, 3-4 years? And, Buckley had a lot of scrutiny, and he's been there, 8 years? So I think we're just jumping to conclusions just to sell papers. Let's just let things go, and we're just going to put too much pressure on him. And Carlton have made some pretty poor decisions getting rid of coaches really quickly because they want answers straight away. I think the media just need to back off and let Carlton be who they are, and it's going to take a little bit more time. And I think Bolton's a great coach. I think he'll be a great coach. He just needs more time.
Rick, thanks for your call. Terry, park that. Paul's in Queensland. He wants to talk about Carlton, so I'll put the two Carlton calls together and get you to quickly comment on both together. Fire away, Paul.
Hi, fellas. Thanks for taking the call. There's a few things I just wanted to bring up, and it's back. It's in relation to the change in the competition since the priority system was taken out. So you look at teams, Brisbane, Melbourne, Richmond, Carlton have taken over 10 years. to get back in the competition. He did a Collingwood in 99, grand final in 2003, in 2005, premiers in 2010, Hawthorn in 2003, played finals in 06, St Kilda were very similar, same with the Bulldogs, Carlton in 05 were premiership favourites in 2010. So, yeah, what's happened to the AFL having an even competition? And if we're not going to have an even competition, can we go back to buying premierships? Because this is just ridiculous. It's clearly an uneven competition when clubs are sitting around for 10 years. I live in Queensland, mate. You're losing people in Queensland. People forget Carlton is the most powerful club outside of Melbourne, as in the distribution of its supporter base. And you're losing generations of supporters.
Thanks for your call, Paul.
It's a real big one of David King's, who sort of says it takes us too long and you get a generation of people, kids who don't see any form of success, so therefore drop off. So therefore when they get to adult status, they're not following their...
They're disengaged.
They're disengaged. So yeah. I do agree with it. The flip side of that is priorities and tanking sat very, very heavily together.
Yeah.
And that's why I think they went away from that aspect of it. But in saying that, it brings me to another point, which is, well, priority picks, Carlton gave away their first round pick this year.
Yeah.
I mean, and this has got nothing to do with Liam Stocker at all.
No.
But you're sitting there at pick 19 in the national draft and you're making a decision to give away your next pick. I would think that, I don't know where you sat with them, Andy, but I thought that they were going to be bottom four again.
Let's get a break out of the way and expand on this on the other side of the break. Have you got a view on... No, we'll hold the views on that.
We've got the caller, the first caller we haven't spoken about.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so we'll get to that as well on the other side of the break. Terry Wallace talking footy with us, but all of your calls too that are queued up. I can see you all there. We'll get to you before too long. And Terry Wallace, just tidying and ticking off those two previous calls before the break, Terry.
So we were talking about the trade that was done last year. I still can't get my head around it and why it was done. You're sitting there 18 picks down. This is the 19th pick that you've got and you go and trade away your first round pick. I mean, I know it was a flip-flop, I think most of us had scheduled Adelaide to be on the rise. They haven't been anywhere near to me. I mean, I know they were third on the ladder last week, but we have to wait until it all sort of settles to see where they are. But most of us saw them on the rise, and most of us in the game thought that Carlton were going to still take another 12 to 18 months to get there. So I definitely had Carlton as a bottom four side. So you're giving away high, high, high-end talent. I mean, the fact that it could be Rowell or it could be Anderson, I mean, these are... That's generational type players that you're actually giving away to get what he'll probably be a really nice player for the footy club, but it's a big risk.
It is.
And if there was a chance of getting a priority pick, nothing much wrong with getting picks one and two and getting Rowell and Anderson to your footy club.
I if that becomes a real issue, the priority pick. And I know, in the last 24 hours, people started bobbing up here and there. And I would love to know what the competition is going to say about the prospect of Carlton getting a priority pick, given the fact that they traded their first pick away last year, given the fact that they have a whole lot of first-round talent on their list.
Yep.
I'm not suggesting for a second that they shouldn't have a crack, but I'll wonder what the rest of the competition is.
Just one other thing very quickly.
After the news headlines. Thanks, Hobbsy. Nice little stretch of weather we're enjoying at the moment. Big woolly jumpers have stayed tucked away for a little while yet, Plough. They haven't come out.
Very nice, Andy. If you get to almost the halfway mark of the footy season and we're still in T-shirts.
It goes all right, doesn't it?
I know it's sort of getting a little bit of the Carlton hour, but our first caller that we had who spoke about that we're too hard on Brendan Bolton and where do we expect them to be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just a couple of very quick points with them. When I get to footy golf later on, you'll see the damage that's been done to the footy golf score of Carlton in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, bad losses actually hits the fabric of your football club. You can't have that bad of losses on a regular basis, and the last 3 weeks have been unacceptable. Yeah. I mean, I know there was an outlier in the middle with the Collingwood one, but, I mean, the the coach himself sort of said, oh, you've seen some of our good stuff in recent weeks. Well, two of the three have been stinky.
Two have been awful. Yeah, absolutely.
Been stinky. But look, I do agree with the fact that, you know, I think that the club needs to really be strong on, are we with him or are we against him? You know, and where that sort of sits. But the next 4 weeks is going to be the whole... whole shooting box.
We'll talk to Jake Knoll about that after one, who's written a piece today, and it was the talking point last night. So let's get away from Carlton for the time being. Hey, to Dom and Jason, I'm sorry to do this to you fellas, but we've done half an hour. We've done the better part of half an hour about Carlton. If you want to call in after one, feel free to do that, but we're just going to get a wriggle on. Otherwise, we're just doing too much on the one club and one issue. Is tagging back. It was completely... It was being frowned about. You can't take a tagger in. Oh, you're one man down in the defensive setup, and the clubs are going to expose you on the way out, and you can't. They're going to play through you if you've got a tagger. All that malarkey we were listening to, Terry.
Well, I mean, you've only got to go to Matt DeBoer and how he's
Hewitt himself. Georgie Hewitt's going right up in Sydney.
George Hewitt, that's the best game I've ever seen him play.
Oh, God, he's having he put together a fantastic 12 to 15, maybe 20 weeks of footy in his career, going back to last year as well.
But they did it. I did that game, and it wasn't one or two. And there's a fascinating thing that I thought some of the footy shows would have picked up on last night, but they didn't. There was a bloke who wasn't even selected in his side on the weekend. He was selected as an emergency. There was a late out. Josh Kennedy come out, and Ryan Clark came in to the side. Just happens that Ryan Clark was given the job. Now, I spoke to Tom Papley at the end of the game, and Tom sort of said, oh, it was a laid out. We give Josh right to the death knell to get himself up. You can't tell me that half an hour before the game, Ryan Clark was told, you're in, and guess what? We are playing you on the dual best and fairest winner, Sean Higgins, your ex-teammate, Sean Higgins. That was a setup.
Yeah.
A beautifully, beautifully constructed setup. Now, I don't know who he was coming in for and whether Kennedy ended up being, but he was in that side. Don't tell me he wasn't in the side. He would have been set for Sean Higgins 4 days out.
I'd love to.
And Sean Higgins would have factored in everyone that could come to him. He would have even factored Ryan Clark wasn't in the side.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's not looking at Ryan Clark. He's not thinking Ryan Clark. All of a sudden, Ryan's in. Ryan's come to me. He's got me before. It was beautifully, absolutely beautifully constructed. And Ryan Clark took Higgins completely out of the game until virtually the last 15 minutes of the game, where Higgins was trying to get him over the line. But it was beautifully constructed.
Yeah.
But this is the art of being able to lock people away, because it wasn't the only time it happened in the game. Jared Pollock had 14 possessions in the first quarter of that game. 14 touches at quarter time. You wonder why North Melbourne were in front. At three-quarter time, he had 19. He was on Jones in the first quarter. Yep. Jones got injured later on, but he had 14. Jones and him just went their own direction, and he had 14. They then sent Robbie Fox to him. Right, Robbie Fox. Half the people in the country wouldn't even know who Robbie Fox was. Robbie Fox is asked, as Ryan Clark was asked, just go and do a job.
Mm.
Just go and take this bloke out of the game. We don't mind whether you don't touch the footy. You're not going to be judged on that. You're going to be judged on what he does or doesn't do. At three-quarter time, when the game was just about done, North come rallying back, 19 touches. So he touched it five times in the next two quarters, and you tell me you can't send blokes out to do a job, I just don't believe
it. Is it flipped? Do you reckon it's flipped?
No.
It's always been there?
No. I think the modern-day player is less equipped to handle a tag than any other time ever, because players, right from the 60s, as long as I watch, there's been blokes going lock on to players, and so therefore your best players were used to getting locked onto. Nowadays, they're not. And so all of a sudden when it happens to a Sean Higgins and it's a surprise path, they don't handle it. They don't handle it. So I can't understand why it's not a weapon that sides would use, and some people do. You know, West Coast got Hutchings. There's a few that do, yep. but it's just amazing.
If you were back in the Cape, would you want to have one? You'd want to have one. You'd want to have at least one, wouldn't you?
I just want the ability to be able to take something off someone.
Yep. Confirmation, by the way, that Dale Thomas and Ivan Soldo are off to the tribunal tonight, so they're going to press their...
Not surprised.
No, they'll have a go. Justin's in
Maybe that's why I'm not still coaching.
Who knows, Terry? Justin's in Wanda, wants to have a chat about the match review office. Good afternoon to you, mate.
Well, Brownlow Medal favourite Ivan Soldo and Brownlow Medal favourite Travis Varco and Brownlow Medal favourite Dale Thomas, bag it off. You didn't want to give people a week for stupidity. Tom Mitchell should have got a week for stupidity last year when the ball was 70 metres down the field. Chris Judd, but this is back when he won the Brownlow, elbowed, he was lying on top of Matthew Kavlich, elbowed him in the head, insufficient force. Four staples. How many staples and stitches do you need in your face?
Cut him open, mate. It's crazy. It's crazy, Justin.
Justin.
But the thing is, you know what'll happen? We come to the middle of the year and everyone has their bye and then it'll tick along and then the grass starts to grow and it gets sunny and 10 teams drop away and it comes to finals and they don't worry, the AFL don't worry about it because they know no one breaks for the AFL. I'm going to support Collingwood no matter what, whether they start rubbing players out ridiculously or not. Like, I think Travis Varco probably deserved a week. But as Buck said, what does he do in that situation?
Yeah.
But they know that we're going to keep supporting our football clubs. So they don't have to really worry about it too much. And I don't know how to fix the system, but you can't have blokes getting off just because they're... Imagine if that happened in the justice system.
Let's say
George Pell got off just because he was George Pell. Yeah. Like, that's the most mind-boggling thing in the world.
I can see, Justin,
And your points and who you spoke about... You're absolutely right.
Yep.
Doesn't mean the other ones should get off, but you can't ask questions about the ones that didn't get put up.
Yeah. I know there's in the middle of all of the things that you've touched on there, Justin,
one Brownlow medals.
Yeah, that's right. You speak on behalf of a lot of fans of the game, I reckon. Paddy in Hoppers Crossing, before we get to the break, footy golf not too far away. I'm not looking forward to that at all this week. Paddy, you want to have a chat about umpiring?
Yeah, g'day, Andy Plough. I just want to get your thoughts on the theory I've got with the umpiring, because I think at the moment it's probably at its lowest ebb. Do you reckon it would improve if you had like teams of umpires, like the same three umpires umpired together for maybe a month, and after a period of time they'd sort of work each other out? And at worst, you should definitely be getting better decisions, more consistent decisions made during your game.
They are inclined to do that, like... match up certain umpires for a period of time, but how do you want to do it? Do you separate the best ones, or do you put the best ones together and put them into the main game? But then if you're doing that, are you giving enough respect to the other games? It is difficult. I mean, I understand the principle of it, and in principle it's done to a degree. So they'll lock them together for 2 or 3 weeks and have them work in teams like that, but... it's just a difficult one to get your head around. So what do you have, the four least experienced umpires working together? Well, no, but then you're putting one really good experience with two inexperienced, but then you're not getting the best of the best. So it's difficult.
Don't give me names, right, because your son's involved. Do you think you know who the best umpires are? Do you recognise, good, we've got these blokes today or these people today, we're in good hands.
Yeah.
So you reckon you know, I'm
confident, and my son's not in them.
I don't want names.
But I'm confident, very confident in about four of them being at another level. Above the rest.
Right.
And when people say we get to grand final day and... why do they umpire the grand final? Because they're the best umpires.
Yeah,
you've actually now got the four best, three on the ground in the emergency, you've got the best of the best umpiring on grand final.
Yeah, okay. Paddy, thanks for your call. Footy golf after the break. I just want to, we'll squeeze in one thing before we get to footy golf if we've got time. That's the Chris Scott talking about the, I know you wanted to chat about the mid-season draft. We'll get to that on the other side of this with Terry Wallace.
I think the concern around that I've heard that I agree with, and I think the relevant people at our club agree with, is that it's going to be used to warehouse players that would otherwise be drafted in November or whenever it is. I don't think that was the intention, and it looks like that's the way it might be used. I mean, Stephen Wells, who I've got an enormous amount of respect for, our list manager and recruiting manager, has been opposed to the idea for a long time on the basis that the art of list management is getting your team ready for the whole season. I think it got a bit of traction because the idea was, well, if we lose a ruckman, we can go and get the best SANFL ruckman. But if it's used to go and get a young kid that didn't get drafted last year, that you would have drafted at the end of this year, and you just sit him in your VFL team for the rest of the season, that's not in the spirit of the system as I see it.
As Chris Scott on 360 last night talking about the mid-season draft.
Spot on. Absolutely spot on, because there's a flaw in what they set up, and clubs are too smart. I mean, yeah, you bring in rules, the clubs will figure out a way around the rules. And you know, basically what's happened is we were hoping that it was going to be for all those players like Sam Collins.
Jai Caldwell.
Josh Corbett, those sort of guys, to get another opportunity. The opportunity that's eluded them, that all of a sudden they're 25 years of age, they can come straight in and, you know, perhaps have an impact. All of a sudden, it's anyone that's been to the national draft before. So you've got 19-year-old kids that are playing in the under-18s competition at the moment that will get picked up because they were only an inch off it. You know, they might have had an injury in their 18th year. They've gone back to that, and they're going to get picked up in the national draft. They've got their pathway.
Yeah.
But we've actually opened up a door to sort of say, okay, yeah, we'll just warehouse them. It's wrong.
You can't take it away from the clubs now, though, can you? Is it too late to put a parameter on the type of player that can be picked up?
I think it's done for this year. I think it'll be closed up for next year. It's just disappointing because, I mean, you imagine you're that 24-year-old and you miss out. You might miss out by one pick. If that 19-year-old wasn't available because he's going to go in a national draft, you get picked.
Now all of a sudden
you don't get picked.
Are you surprised that that potential loophole wasn't seen?
Absolutely.
It seems fairly obvious to me.
Absolutely. And it's absolutely against the spirit of the whole reason that all of us sort of said, yeah, let's have a mid-season draft.
Yep.
It goes completely against it. So it's disappointing.
Yeah, it does. Golf. Yeah, footy golf. Man, over to you, buddy.
He at 16, listen to the crowd.
They're going to go nuts when he hits this thing.
Lambert with a setup kick for Revolt! This is it!
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
Fontapelli, the future star, the present star, steady!
Oh! All right. I've not been looking forward to this for 48 hours.
Okay, we'll march through this. Time's got away from us a bit today. So West Coast Eagles par, Melbourne par for their efforts on last Friday night.
Yep, fair enough.
West Coast got it done. Melbourne were pretty competitive with a banged-up team. Collingwood a birdie for the margin that it ended up being. I mean, it was a hard work to get the birdie, but they got it. St Kilda a bogey. Not for effort, but because the margin blew out a little bit too much. I mean, it could have quite easily been a par for the Saints, but just blew out a little bit too much. Brisbane a par, Adelaide a par. About how I expected the game to go. Nice, tightly fought match. Geelong a birdie and Bulldogs a bogey. Exactly the same as the Collingwood St Kilda game. I thought the effort of the Bulldogs was fantastic. It was almost a par, but it just blew out a little bit too much at the right at the bitter end. And so birdie for the Cats because they were able to blow it out that far. Essendon a par, Fremantle a par. Certainly not for the standard of the game, but just for the way that the game played out. I gave North Melbourne a bogey and Sydney a birdie. I nearly gave North a double bogey.
Really?
Nearly gave North that's second and third quarter.
So it wasn't salvaged.
The other mob had 18 players, less than 100 games. Yeah. They won with kids. So, bogey for North, birdie for Sydney, a birdie for Port, and a bogey for the Gold Coast. It was close to a par for the Gold Coast.
Blew out marginally, but
I'm very close to a par for them. A birdie for Richmond and a bogey for Hawthorn. Just before we get to the last game, I just really wanted you to have a listen to a little bit of this, Andy.
just sit back and cop it sweet. If you're a Carlton player right now, you've got to decide to do something about this. Kennedy kicks right from the arc of 50. That is as good a kick as you've seen from Adam Kennedy in his career. So they get the first couple of the third quarter within the opening 8 minutes. And this is getting diabolically bad for a lot of people around the Carlton Footy Club.
Well, I did the other game, Andy. I did the Hawthorne game. So I jumped in my car at the MCG and was driving home and feeling your pain as it was going along. I've had a lot of calls on this about what Carlton should get. GWS get an eagle because of the percentage that they built, and it really sort of helps them set themselves up. A lot of people were sort of saying, what's the worst score I've given? A quadruple bogey, I think it's about the worst that I've given. I gave Carlton a triple bogey. Okay. I didn't give them a quad because I expected GWS to win. I usually save quadruple bogeys for real upsets and a big margin.
A bit like the Giants the week before against Hawthorn,
correct,
almost.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, yeah, I expected GWS to hit back and hit back pretty hard. So Carlton just... And this is what I was sort of saying before. It's been a disaster. Round six, Carlton were one under. One under. Now they're plus five.
Yeah, it's been two out of three, man.
Well, that's I mean, that's what does the damage to teams. I mean, all of a sudden they were, you know, respectable in their scoreline, and it's just blown out.
What about the top end of the leaderboard?
Top end of the leaderboard, Geelong are on minus seven under. Hawthorn, Collingwood are four under.
Yep.
Richmond have bolstered up now to three under.
Good. Happy to hear it. Right, one last question that I want to pose here about something that we've just looked at on the way through, and I'll do that quickly with you on the other side of the break. Terry Walsh to wrap up the hour with us on the other side of this. We'll do your Plowlow votes on Thursday, Terry. We'll wrap those up then. Sometimes a very basic bottom line stat gets overlooked, and that is the points scored on any given weekend. Now, I know you can take this into account, the opposition. Collingwood 112, the Giants 138, Geelong 133. Have those three got a gear or gears that we haven't seen from many other teams in 2019 to this point?
Yeah, they've got weapons, haven't they? And that's why a side like Fremantle, who want to drag it back to just being an arm wrestle contest, won't beat those sides because they've got another gear to go to. So as much as what you're trying to drag their scores down, they've got the ability to be able to score and score rapidly. And you think about those games, how quickly those three sides scored when they got hold of all the three sides that they were playing, they scored really quick. And that's where Fremantle, you'll keep some sides down, you'll keep the middling sides down, but you won't keep the best down.
They've got specialised players in specialised areas on the ground who can do particular jobs very, very well.
Yeah. They're the three. Look, they should be the three top seeds at the moment. We've got a little bit of a watch on the Tigers, obviously, because they're going to get a few back, but they deserve to be the top three seeds.
Thanks for coming in.
I'll see you
Thursday.
Cheers,
Terry Wallace joining us. Jake Niles going to talk about where the Blues are at, and then we're going to open it up for you lot. I know a lot of you are getting sick of the Carlton conversation. You tell us after Jake what we should be talking about.